Focus. Life penalty, part two. Does anyone remember anything from part one? That most difficult question. Raise your hand if you can remember a point that we discussed yesterday. Yes?
Should I just hear you just continue to smile?
That's ideal. Better to balance. We're going to have to make adjustments in life if we want to keep balance. Like riding a bicycle. If you decide this is the balanced state of my bicycle or this, you'll fall over. You have to be fluid and be conscious and make a continuous series of minor adjustments, as opposed to the Avanti Brahmana went like this. He was so extreme in this way, and then he went boom onto that side. But he was so strong and determined that he was able to maintain that. But that's not the recommended process. We shouldn't be extreme on that side. Anyone remember anything else? Raise your hand if you actually, okay, well, I won't call on everyone, but raise your hand if you actually remember something from yesterday's class. Raise your hand if you remember yesterday. Yeah, okay. Okay, raise your hand if you would like to just say one thing that you remember from yesterday's class. Yes?
Three types of bhakti, loops, loop siddha bhakti, sangha siddha bhakti, and arop siddha bhakti.
Okay, what was the first one you said?
Loop.
What was the first one?
Loop siddha.
What was the third one?
Arop siddha.
Yeah, no. I mean, yes, you said three, but they weren't the three. Sarup siddha bhakti, arop siddha bhakti, and sangha siddha bhakti. Sarupa siddha bhakti. Sarupa. But thank you very much. Thank you. Do you know what the Sarup Siddha Bhakti are? You know what that is? It's those, the type of bhakti that inherently, naturally, has all the potency of bhakti in it. By itself, chanting Krishna's names, hearing about Krishna, seeing the deity, serving the deities. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasanam, what? Dasanam? Atmanavedanam. Thank you very much. Anyone else remember something from yesterday? Just looking for someone who usually doesn't. Yes?
Do the service of the Vaishnavas' desires.
Well, yes. That's very good. Did I speak about that?
But you give the statement of the state. If you are not, if you can't do any physical service to them, but you can fulfill their...
Oh yes, we spoke about that. Yes, yes. Don't only think serving the devotees means they have to be there bringing them cups of water, etc. Yes, thank you, thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else remember anything? Yes?
The stages, the initial stages, bhajan, kriya, not for vridhi, is just like going uphill. We have to really paddle hard and we have to struggle hard.
It seems like it. Yes.
Come to the level of nishtha, it's a plane. So it will be a smooth ride, although still we have to paddle. But once we cross on the nishtha, then it's a downhill. So it's really easy.
If you have a taste, you don't have to pedal anymore. It's all spontaneous. If that's, this is all I want. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
Have a well-defined goal.
Yes. Although, unless, and specifically in Krishna consciousness, yeah, we want to have a brightly burning Krishna conscious goal. Otherwise, all our balance pedaling will be just going around in circles. Thank you. Anyone else remember something?
You gave us a list of things to watch out for in terms of making these minor adjustments to balance.
Yeah. And not a complete list, but just some points to that are usual points that need balancing. And I must remember something, one more. Yes.
If your job doesn't involve Krishna, then so you can donate money.
Yes, yes. You know which form of bhakti that is? So I don't remember which one that is. Arupa. Because arupa means imposition. So you're imposing bhakti upon something that it naturally doesn't have anything to do with bhakti. There are other ways too. I would say if you have that job that you can bring bhakti into it, you can give everyone prasadam, etc. Things like that. So somehow or another you impose bhakti where there isn't bhakti. Anyone else remember something?
Goal is very important. Goal is the most important.
Unless we have a goal burning brightly, where will be the impetus to pedal? Okay, I'm just looking for people who haven't spoken.
Importance of cultivating goodness.
Yeah. That's a good point. We should cultivate goodness because it's naturally the balanced type of consciousness which is helpful. But passion is also helpful too because it brings fruit that can be offered to Krishna, but it's uncomfortable. It makes the bicycle go like this a lot. But ignorance, there's almost no use for because driving along you'll fall off your bicycle. Or you bump into trees and things like that. But at least passion has a use. You can use all that energy to offer something to Krishna. And if we didn't have, if there was nothing we could do with our passion, what would we do? Practically speaking. No, we're going to go on. Onward. So what I wanted to discuss today, there's just three points that I wanted to make this practical. The goal is to be able to ride our bicycle to Krishna and as smooth as we practically can. Emergencies do happen that will knock us this way and that way a bit, but we want to be able to adjust, and a series of small adjustments is what we're looking for. And again, to keep the goal burning brightly, if we don't have good sadhana, if we don't have good hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, then it's not going to burn. And if we don't serve Srila Prabhupada's preaching, we'll be missing some mercy that comes from that gives us the strength to pedal and to perform the sadhana too. So all these things, there's so many things though, that's the problem. And they all make their demands. And at different times of our life, different things have their different time requirements for their demands. I mean, I remember until the time I was 55 almost, I never, or 50, I can't remember when it started, but I never had to think about health at all. Now it takes up a lot of time. So different times of our life, different demands, and different, not only stages of our lives, but different times of the year. So it takes consciousness, and it takes ability to adjust. And what we're trying to do is avoid major life-shattering turnover adjustments. We want to proceed as smoothly as we practically can. So in this regard, I have three practical suggestions. I tried to make it simple and practical. One was, at a regular time each week, quickly review your life. Now, we did this yesterday, and no one had ever done it before, but we took that simple list and just went over it mentally with a little bit writing down. And you know how much time it took? It took 15 minutes, 15, 20 minutes at most. And then there was another 5 minutes. Well, and it wasn't more than 5 minutes. So I asked, how many, could you tell me what adjustment do you need in the next week? When I say adjustment, I mean what needs attention in your life from all these different points in your list? What needs attention in your life right now? And what by giving attention will make the most difference in your life right now? What do you need to keep in balance? So, practically speaking, without any magic formulas or anything like that, everyone within 2 to 5 minutes figured out what they had to do in the next week. Not that they could do it, but we tried to suggest, make it really, really practical, but everyone knew what had to be done. And it took 20 minutes in total, maybe 25. And so the first suggestion, and this is not an easy one to do, even though it seems so simple, at a regular time each week, quickly review your life. Ask yourself, what part of my life now requires balancing, attention, or an adjustment? So after taking some time to just get a feel for your life, and that was the first time you did it, so I would assume you could, if you had a list like that and a little paper, it would only take you, you could do it in 10 minutes without too much trouble. And especially, you'll be doing it, if you start doing it regularly, you'll start doing it every day, practically speaking, and it'll take you 1 minute. Ask yourself, what adjustment can I practically make that will make the most positive difference in my life? Or, practically speaking, it's more of a feeling. What do I need to do to keep more balance? It's not like an intellectual thing so much. But what do I need to keep my life in balance right now? So, you want to do all this, keeping in mind your life's goal, as well as both the immediate and distant future. So this sounds a little more complicated than it has to be, because you want to get your Krishna conscious goal. So that has to be kept in mind, its purposes, so that you move in that direction. And then you also have to know what you're going to be doing in the next 6 months too, you know, or the next year. You have to keep all these things in mind. But really you want to primarily focus on the up and coming week, because that's a good unit of time that's practical. It's within the reach of a consciousness, of the consciousness. What can I do this week? No. So it's quite practical in that sense, and if you do this type of reviewing every week, and then you have to schedule it, and you have to find some way, you know, I'm going to do it on this day, and this day, and this day. Say some devotees, when they went out alone yesterday, and were internal while they were alone, or tried to be internal while they were alone, they realized, I need this kind of time. So then, that might be the most important thing in their life that will give them the strength to continue in a very strong way. Not everyone is like that. Some people need a completely different kind of adjustment. Like Christine was saying, like, you know, I need to talk with people, devotees more, you know, because I'm in my house alone all the time. Both of us are there, me and my mind, all the time. You know, we don't get along very well. You didn't say that, but
it's true.
Well, I know. How do you think I know? So then someone may have to schedule, and so you just something that will keep you strong and going forward, and there may be more than one thing that really needs, so something at the beginning of the week. But don't get over idealistic. You know, my whole life is going to change now, and from now on. Never start like with from now on. You know, just start with, if I could do it this week, for one time this week or something like that, I'm pretty lucky. So, and then not only that, with the week, but just in a very, very simple way, every day, just think, what do I need a little bit of today? Do I need a little more, you know, more chanting today, more reading today, a little more service today, a little more exercise today, a little more time alone together, with time alone or together with devotees? Do I need time to spend with my family today? Do I need time just in front of the deities today? Do I need time doing a little extra service today, thinking of my spiritual master and doing some special service? Just every day, just give a quick scan in addition to that weekly thing. And that can, once you get the hang of that, that takes approximately a minute. Because something that I find, it's quite amazing, but it's quite interesting, it's very interesting, is that as soon as you become conscious of the different parts of your life and what and how you're feeling and thinking about things, you immediately know what you need. So make adjustments as quickly as you practically can, not as you possibly can, but as quickly as you practically can. Because it's possible you can just make a huge shift, but be practical, always be practical. And don't be idealistic. Be practical. Do something small. Plan something small that you can and will actually do. And the worst part about making plans that you don't keep and promises, especially to yourself that you don't keep, you start not trusting yourself. You become disappointed in yourself. And that's not very good. You want to become strong. So a baby step actually taken in the right direction, in adjustment. Because next time you can, you know, later in the week or the next day or the next week, you can move a little more in the right direction. But if you make a plan that's perfect or something like that, but you don't follow it, that's useless, obviously. In fact, it's worse than useless. It's harmful. Because then you lose enthusiasm to keep trying. Well, the tendency is there. So be practical, be practical, be practical. Don't be idealistic. Don't overplan. Don't overhope that suddenly I'm going to change completely and everything's going to change and from now on I'm going. Just don't even bother. I mean, things like do happen, like the Avanti Brahmana, but he was so strong. It was a different age too. He was so strong. And his once he took shelter of Paratma, of Mukundangri, the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda, that was it. He would not leave that shelter. If you're that strong, do it. You don't need anything else. But be practical, be practical. Keep your feet on the ground. But make sure they're pedaling the bicycle forward to Krishna. So that's the first. Well, that doesn't work, does it? If they're on the ground, they can't be pedaling. Okay, we'll have to change our example there, our metaphor. Okay, number two, keep a daily journal. This one will help keep you conscious of what you're doing. But it really only needs to take 5 minutes. And it's very, very specific what I have in mind. Not like today I got up at this time and I chanted this and I brushed my teeth and then I ate 4 chapatis and then I went to sleep and then I went to see the deities and they were wearing red and green. That's very nice. And then I got on the bus and I was 5 minutes late for work. Not that kind of a journal, which is a full-time endeavor, huh?
That's for Facebook.
One time I was in Vrindavan, wandering around with my camera, and I was taking photos. I was on the Parikrama Marg, and I saw one sadhu Did I tell you this? I told you this one. You're laughing already. You must know. And I and he said, and he said, you can take my photo. So he was in saffron and everything. He looked tantric-y and a little bit intoxicated, perhaps. But so then he leaned against the tree like this one, this really nice old banyan tree. And he just leaned and he smiled in a very subtle-like way. And then I showed him and he said, you can put on my Facebook? Anyway, it's not that kind of a journal. Just three simple questions. This is, I use this many, many times when I'm starting a new endeavor. When I'm doing anything, it's a simple way to keep things moving forward. Because you just ask three questions and answer them. Keep it really simple. If you make things, from my experience in life, if you don't, whatever isn't simple doesn't work. Or you won't continue. So what went well? So psychologically, you're reinforcing the positive, using psychological terms. So what went well, you're reminding yourself and reinforcing it, and that helps you do what went well the next day. And then you become conscious of what didn't go well, and you make a simple plan how to adjust what didn't go well so that you're improving. Now, your plan may not work, but it may help and it may give you the clue to something that does work. When you try that your current plan the next day and that still doesn't work, you may get an idea that moves you forward about and to what does work. It's just these three simple questions. When starting something new, I often will do this. And what you're doing, in other words, you're reinforcing or giving yourself, you're reminding yourself of what did work, so you'll do that again. And what didn't go well, you're improving. So if you're doing the things always that do work and improving what didn't work, things naturally go a bit better. So second one is keep a journal, quite simple. Don't make it lengthy. Keep it really, really simple. And three is what I think the one will actually help everyone do the first two, because it's, even though it really sounds like good ideas right now, as soon as you leave, when the rest of your life hits you, these get washed away quite quickly, and they remain on your mobile phone if you've taken pictures of everything in that way or whatever. But this one is actually my hope that will make it work. And it's work with a friend. Now, and then I had a friend who also wishes to improve the balance in his life and who is willing to work with you. So what I would suggest, and to really make it practical, see, because what I want to do right now is set up the friends, because there's only the people in this room who are interested in trying this. But just the trickiest part is to find the friend in one sense. So what you naturally want to do is find a friend who you can confide with and talk with, and your intimate friend. But I would suggest we don't do that on this level, because we don't need counselors. This is not a duplicate counseling system or anything like that. But just someone who will ask you, are you doing, just so you can ask each other, encourage each other to do these three things. Are you keeping a journal? Are you reviewing your life? Is it going all right in that way? And are you keeping what you said you would do? Just really, really simple, without having to go into details. You don't have to discuss with your friend the intimate aspects of your life that need balancing. not that kind of a friend, just for this particular purpose. Not a counselor, not... I mean, that we may have, if we're a confidant, if we're fortunate, we have deep friendships that we deeply share with people like that. But for this particular purpose, it won't be practical if we do that, find that kind of a pair up in that way. So what I would suggest is right now, just turn to someone, the person closest to you, whoever it is, whether he's your friend or your enemy, or neither, or neutral, because that's only the mind's concoction anyway, and just do two things. First of all, it's just the people who actually want to try this for 1 month. Just for 1 month, and then after that, you can drop it or keep it if you want. But for 1 month, once a week, talk to the person and just ask him about these three things. Whether the person is senior to you, junior to you, just ask him about that. Be polite if the person is senior to you, of course. And be kind and compassionate if the person is junior to you. But just talk about these three things. How did your journal go? Did you do it every day? Just encourage them like that, and just because, you know, just the fact that someone's going to ask you about it, how embarrassing it is if you have these simple things. And what was the first one again? Oh yeah, we have to review our life. 15 minutes like that to do that, and then pick some things and schedule them. Did you actually do them during the week and things like that, things that you said you did. Just simple. It could be a 10-minute conversation like that. So find a friend to do it with right now, and make a time that you're going to speak next week, right now. And this is I was thinking, how am I going to get the devotees to actually do this, to try it? This is the best I could think of after 4 years of trying to figure out how to get it to be practical. So find someone. Just turn in some direction. And if you can't find anyone, that's crazy. Yeah, simple. Can't turn both ways at the same time. Just tap him, make him turn one way, commit himself. Go that way. This one. These two. You two. Raise your hand if you haven't found anyone. Raise your hand if you haven't found anyone. Okay, you haven't found anyone. Okay. Okay, there's two people who haven't found. You're found. Lost and found. Go make it time. Quickly. Now, okay, just make it time. And there's one more point in this, and then we'll move on. Okay, now just one more point. I said actually in the beginning that this is really only if you wish to try this for 1 month, but because we did it in that way, I didn't really, it's awkward, you know, to say who doesn't want to try this actually for 1 month, because who wants to raise their hand, you know, something like that. So everyone sort of got forced into doing this whether you liked it or not. But after we finish, if you actually don't really want to bother with this right now, it's not the right time of your life or something like that, just tell the person that you sort of just made your commitment to in that sense, and then he'll come and tell Chaitanya that he doesn't have anyone to try this with, and maybe there'll be a few people like that, so then we'll just shift it around. But please, if you really don't want to do this, please feel free not to do it. And this way, this is a simple and private way to pull out. Okay, clear? You don't have to do that right now. you can do it right after, too. I mean, you know, when no one's looking. Okay, we have to move on because time, as it inevitably does, moves forward. Here's a summary. This is just a summary of this life balancing points. Become conscious of what requires attention in your life, because we don't want to topple over. We want to proceed as soon as we practically can. Act to maintain your balance by making a constant series of minor adjustments. We wish to avoid the need to make extreme adjustments as much as we practically can. Emergencies occur and life pushes us anyway, so we sometimes do have to do that. We want, as much as practical, we wish to avoid the need to make extreme adjustments. Our attempt is to smoothly proceed forward with strong sadhana in a balanced way to attain the Krishna conscious goal of our life. Our next example of in life balancing, first one being the Avanti Brahmana. And we can't follow his example, although we learn from him and admire his goals. And if we have the qualification to fully take shelter as he took shelter, I have no right to say that we shouldn't follow his example, but we shouldn't imitate. But the second person is still more astonishing, who we're going to hear about in our life balancing attempt, because he's really on one side, but the difference is that he stays on that side. And I'll give you a hint who we're going to speak about right now and what his end is. And there he is. He's King Kamsa. Now, when speaking about Krishna's killing of of Kamsa, it's very difficult to know where to begin. Because there's unlimited places we could begin. We could begin at the first chapter of the 10th canto when Brahma approaches, when Bhumi approaches Brahma and complains about the overburdening of the earth, and then Brahma prays at the ocean of milk for the Lord's descent. And then we can begin at the birth of Krishna, and Vasudev carrying baby Krishna across the Yamuna to Gokul. But where I would like to begin is, other than a detail is or two, but I would like to begin is the morning of the death of Kamsa. The morning prior to the death of Kamsa. Now, when Krishna left Vrindavan, which is a pastime that is very difficult to speak about by someone who's not qualified, because or even by someone who is qualified, because it involves so many transcendental emotions. And it is inconceivable practically what the residents of Vrindavan went through when Krishna left Vrindavan. It is inconceivable, because what we understand of as love in this world It's just such a dim reflection of what true love is, and the commitment and the totality of absorption that the residents of Vrindavan had in Krishna. And their totality of absorption was completely generated by their spontaneous, natural, and of a specific mood, their love for Krishna. So complete. Mother Yashoda, when she couldn't see Krishna for a moment, she would cry like a calf, like a mother cow cries. When she can't see her calf, Mother Yashoda was prepared to die 1,000 deaths to save Krishna one drop of perspiration or inconvenience. What to speak of the Braja Gopikas, what to speak of everyone, Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd boys, the cowherd men, the trees of Vrindavan, the peacocks, the birds, Giriraj, the Yamuna River, everyone, all of Vrindavan, just they only know Krishna, their lives, everything is focused on Krishna only. So when Krishna left, Akura drove them on the chariot, and we won't talk any details, but Mother Yashoda was so distraught that Krishna thought, how is he going to survive? So he sent a messenger back and said, "Oh mother, by the time I get to Mathura, I'm going to be so hungry. Please prepare some of that special milk that you make with me and some special rice. And then I'll take the milk and soak it in the rice and I'll remember you and I'll be so satisfied." Krishna was thinking, I have to give her something to do, otherwise she won't survive. So Mother Yashoda actually made that rice and she would take the milk from special cows. They're called Padmaganda cows because they have the fragrance of lotuses. And she would take those special cows and feed them special grass, so that she would have they would give the most tasty milk. And then, so she sent that with a messenger. And then when Krishna arrived in Mathura, then Akura, of course, invited him to his home, and Krishna said, "Yes, yes, yes, I will go, but first I have to do my duty of killing Kamsa." And then he and the cowherd boys, they wandered in Mathura. They were like village boys on one level. And this is the first time they had been to the big city, with all the big buildings and its opulences. And everyone in Mathura had heard about Krishna before, but no one had seen him before. They had heard about he had performed so many wonderful activities, how beautiful he was, they heard everything. Practically speaking, it's very interesting. They knew about Krishna's secret activities, Krishna's dealings with the gopis, more than than Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj knew, because they would talk about it openly, the ladies of Mathura. So, because you know how it is in a village, everyone blah, 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 everyone knows everyone's business, but this, everyone's business in Vrindavan that everyone knew was Krishna. So it was perfect. So everyone was absorbed in talking about Krishna. So Krishna saw the washerman, and much we could talk about that for a long time. And then after getting some fresh clothing, dressing, getting fresh, beautiful, kingly cloth, because he was wearing just village attire, and there he was going to, he was invited for the wrestling arena, to the wrestling thing, so he wanted to be dressed properly, because Krishna likes to be dressed properly, in a dancing, like a famous actor, he always likes, Krishna likes to be the center of attention. He's Krishna. He's allowed to be, but when we try to be the center of attention, it doesn't quite work, and we can't convince anyone to make us the center of attention other than for a short period of time. So in any case, Krishna went to the then he went to the tailor, and then he went to the garland maker, whose name was
Sudha.
Who said that? Who said that?
Me.
Yeah. Who is me? I can't. Oh, you! I thought you said it was me, but it's you. His name was Sudama. Yes, and this Sudama actually, he had met Krishna before many, many, many times, because he used to go to Vrindavan forest to find the very rare and exotic flowers that were there, because he was a garlandic, a mali. So he would go there, and then when he was in Vrindavan, he would see Krishna and the cows and the cowherd boys, and they'd be wandering around. And he would hear the sound of their bells, and he met Krishna many times. And because his name was Sudama, and one of Krishna's dearest cowherd boyfriends was named Sudama, naturally, they developed a friendship. So when Krishna was wandering in Mathura, he thought, oh, my friend Sudama must live around here. And at that place, the florist was there, and Krishna gave him... Sudama was so happy and gave Krishna the most wonderful garland, and then Krishna benedicted him in so many ways. And then after that, Krishna had fine clothes from the washerman and the tailor, and he was wearing a fine garland, and then he needed his decorations. So then he saw Kubja. Kubja, Srivakra decorated him in such a wonderful way. And then he received worship from all the residents of Mathura, and after that, there's no one there. Oh! What did you bring? Okay. But that's not... Okay. And then, Krishna decided to... Because the excuse that Kamsa gave to bring Krishna to Mathura was the wrestling match, and also, what was the other reason? There was a jagya, a sacrifice, dana jagya, yes. And this bow was very significant, because the bow was given to Kamsa by Lord Parsaram, who had gotten it from Lord Shiva. And Parsaram, because Kamsa, the story of Kamsa is quite amazing, I won't tell it in detail, but he was so powerful, that he went to the mountain where Parsaram was staying, and he lifted it up 10 times, he picked it up and dropped it down, and Parsaram was so furious. So he came to see him. He said, who is doing this? What kshatriya is doing this? You are like a mosquito. I'll kill you. Because Parsaram didn't like kshatriyas very much. So Kamsa said, I'm not a kshatriya. I'm an asura. And he explained that actually he wasn't the son of Ugrasena. Actually, he was the son of an asura who took the form of Ugrasena. So Parsaram said, okay. And he said, and then he offered such prayers, such sweet, humble prayers to Parsaram. You are the greatest. There's so many flattering prayers. And Parsaram said, okay, I'm pleased. You see this bow over here? You string this bow, and it is yours, and it is so powerful. If you fail to string it, you will die. And he Kamsa immediately was able to string the bow. Because in previous life he was Kalanemi, who was the son of Haranyakasipu, who had prayed to Brahma and got some very benedictions of power. So when he strung it, Parsaram was pleased with him. And he said, This will give you so much power, but if anyone breaks this bow, that person will kill you, will be the one who kills you. So this was the Dhanadavya, the bow that was being worshipped in the arena. This was Kamsa's bow, the bow of Lord Shiva. So that Vishnu had given to Shiva at the time of when he was fighting in when he became Triparati, and he was fighting the demons at that time. So when Kamsa, so Krishna went there with Balaram and the coward with it, the coward boys, and they were just playing and having just enjoying themselves in the city. And they went to the bow and the sacrifice, and the sacrifice was going to be the next day. And they walked there and they said, oh, we want to see the bow. And the soldiers were there guarding the bow. And said, no, you cannot see the bow. But we want to touch the bow. We want to see it. You cannot. And Krishna just pushed them aside and he took the bow and he broke it. And broke it. And then the guards attacked him. And Balaram took one end of the broken bow and Krishna took the other and killed all the guards with pieces of the bow. Kamsa heard the sound of the bow being broken and his heart cracked because he knew Krishna was here. But even at that time, and here's the example of that if we shouldn't follow the Avanti Brahmana's example, we shouldn't follow Kamsa's example even more. Because despite the fact that look what Krishna had done, everyone who Kamsa had sent to kill Krishna, from Putana to Trinavartas to Sakatasura to this one, to his friend Kaliya, to Pralambasura, to Bhagasura, Vatsasura. Each and every one of them had been killed. Kamsa was so strong-minded and fixed in being an asura that he would not change. He would not shift. He would not surrender. He would not release Devaki and Vasudev from prison. Rather, he was trying to use them to draw Krishna. He knew that Krishna and Balaram would come to free them, to use them, to bring them into Mathura, to kill them. So at that point, when he heard the breaking of the bow, even though he knew his death was right there, he still would not surrender. If that moment he would have said, uh-oh, Krishna's going to kill me, I better surrender. Krishna, I'm really sorry for putting your parents in prison for 18 years or something. I'm really sorry for killing all your brothers and sisters. I really didn't mean it. I was in a bad mood. Please forgive me. He would have said, oh, because Krishna's nature is to forgive like that. But Krishna was letting him know that I'm here. And then Krishna returned. He went. He didn't just return home. But he returned to Mathura. He just played the coward boys in Mathura, and gradually he wandered home. It was like he had no care in the world. There was not once the slightest bit of anxiety or anything like that. And everyone in Mathura was just staring at Krishna because he was so beautiful and so attractive and so effulgent. So Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, they had parked the bullock carts and the cowherd boys outside of the city. They did not move in the city. And Krishna and Balaram just went to sleep underneath the carts in a peaceful way with the cowherd boys joking and playing. And that milk that Yasoda had sent with the rice, Krishna ate it at that time very peacefully. And he slept soundly all night long. But Kamsa could not sleep for 1 minute. Everywhere he saw inauspicious omens. When he was awake, when his eyes were open, when his eyes were closed, there was, in the Bhagavatam, so many inauspicious things are mentioned that he saw. His Krishna consciousness was so focused, he could not think of anything but Krishna, but it was all pratikul, it was all anti-Krishna, not anukulena Krishna. It was all anti-Krishna, not affection, with affection to Krishna. But he was always thinking of Krishna. So in that sense, he was Krishna conscious, but it's not devotional service, obviously. So at the same time as Kamsa couldn't sleep, also Nanda Maharaj couldn't sleep all night long because he was thinking, oh, why did I bring my boys here? They're so restless. Why did they have to wander through Mathura? Why did they have to break the bow? Now, who knows what this rascal Kamsa's going to do? Now he's angry at them. Oh, no. Why did I bring my boys here? I said, leave immediately. Why did I do this? My poor boys. Oh, this Kamsa, all night long, he did not sleep either. Then early the next morning, before anyone else was awake, practically speaking, Krishna and Balaram went to the Yamuna and were playing in the water and bathing, etc. And it was the morning of the wrestling match was going to take place. And Nanda Maharaj, because Krishna wanted Nanda Maharaj to go in advance, that was one of the reasons that Krishna did this, because he didn't want him to see certain things that he was going to do. So Nanda Maharaj went to the wrestling arena he went to the wrestling arena when everything was being set up and Kamsa was already there. There were many great stands around and the dignitaries were seated. Kamsa was seated on the highest of daises with his guards and topmost ministers. And Nanda Maharaj came and presented himself. But he went in and he saw that there was no sitting place for him there, so he was asked to sit somewhere in the back. So he went there with the cowherd men in the back, and most of the cowherd boys, they were there, and all the residents of Mathura, and the whole arena was full. And then the wrestlers entered, these huge, huge wrestlers. And Krishna and Balaram at this time were like 9 years old or 10 years old, like this. They're sort of soft, tender young boys, immature in their bodies, and there's these huge wrestlers, huge, huge, like the topmost. Kamsa had actually, he would go around to all these demonic persons who were powerful, like Chanura, Mastika, Sala, Toshala, and Kuta, and all the demons practically. But with these wrestlers, what he did, they were very proud of their wrestling. So he went to them and he said, why don't we wrestle? And if you defeat me, I will become your servant. And if I defeat you, you will become my servant. All right? So they agreed. And Kamsa would like destroy them. He was so powerful, through them and beat them and, until they surrendered. And then this is how they all became servants of Kamsa, all these powerful asuras. Or most of them, anyway. So these Chanura Mastika were there, and they sat down on the mats, the big wrestling mats that were arranged, and the drums were playing this wrestling type of music, you know, that excites the crowd and the sort of a martial spirit. And Nanda Maharaj is thinking, where's Krishna and Balaram? They're not even here. This is insulting to the king. He's going to become even more angry. He didn't actually understand what Kamsa's plan was, but this is just the nature of prema. It fills the lover with anxiety for the beloved. So Nanda Maharaj was in complete anxiety at this time, and then Kamsa called Nanda Maharaj forward. And Nanda Maharaj sent some of the trusted family cowherd men to tell Krishna and Balaram to come. So Nanda Maharaj comes at this time and called Krishna and Balaram and Nanda Maharaj forward and said, "Oh, Nanda Maharaj, you are the most important of all my village kings. You came to the city Mathura last night, but yet you did not come and visit me. Why? Could it be that you were afraid that I'd be angry because Krishna broke the bow? No. I know that Krishna is strong, and that's why I invited him here for this wrestling competition. No, I'm not angry at all. We just want to enjoy the wrestling. Do not be afraid." And then Nanda Maharaj sent Upananda forward with gifts for Kamsa of milk and yogurt and ghee and golden cloth. That's actually why after Krishna was born, immediately, what was the first thing that Nanda Maharaj did? Does anyone know?
Give the jerseys.
No? Oh, well, yes, he did that. But then what did he do? In the fifth chapter of the tenth canto, what is the first thing he did practically after those immediate things? Quite astounding. What did he do?
Donated 900,000 cows.
But after he did that? Yes, he went to Mathura. Krishna is born, he immediately goes to pay his taxes. What a time to pay his taxes. But the reason was because he wanted to give Kamsa some tax money so Kamsa wouldn't come around to Vrindavan and give Krishna any trouble. Immediately this was what was on his mind because they knew Kamsa's nature. He was such a demon. He was a Rakshasa, killer of Brahmins, destroyer of the Yadu dynasty. So when Krishna and Balaram and the boys were at the Yamuna playing, they heard the drums for the wrestling arena and they became excited. "Oh, let's go to the wrestling arena, let's go. So Krishna, "Yes, let's go." So they put on their fine clothes again that they had just gotten, and Krishna, looking like the best of actors, walked up to the wrestling arena. So this is the point I'm going to begin. Except that I began so long ago. What happened? Done it again. Because we don't have much time. But what Kamsa had done, being a very clever politician, he had left this huge elephant, which he also got by similar means, named Kuvalaya Pita, who was the strongest 10,000 elephants, at the gate. Now, he had left him there because thinking that I have to have a reason why he's there. So the gate wasn't big enough for the elephant to get through into the arena, and Kamsa went riding on the elephant. So therefore, Kamsa had to get off the elephant to enter into the arena, so naturally the elephant had to be there. So that's the way a politician works. He makes up a logical reason to do what he wants to do. So he had the elephant there, and the elephant's purpose was only one, and it was to kill Krishna, and the elephant was demonic also as well. So, and the mahout, the driver of the elephant, was also a demon, and he kept sticking the elephant with the goad, the ankush. To get the elephant more and more angry. So when Krishna came up to the gate, the elephant was waiting there for him. And his job was to kill Krishna. So elephants have many ways of killing people. They crush them with their feet, they crush them with their bodies against a wall, they pick them up with their trunks and then throw them down on the ground, things like that. So, when soon as Krishna came, he saw what was going on, and he stepped forward right in front of the elephant and said, "Move aside, or I will send you to the court of Yamaraj immediately." Because Krishna, he was in a good mood for a fight also. And also he wanted to bring out the demonic spirit. And he did that with the washerman as well. He wanted to poke him a little bit to see what was inside so that the demonic side came out. So he did that. And the driver poked him. And everyone was upset. No one liked what was going to happen, because the people who knew, people who were with Krishna thought, "Oh, this elephant is could hurt Krishna," and the people on the other side thought that "Oh no, Krishna is going to kill this elephant. It's going to be messy either way," like that. But the elephant, Krishna just stood there, and the elephant grabbed him with his trunk. See, that's just what, because hati means hand, right? That's an elephant. Hat means hand in Sanskrit. So that's the fifth hand of an elephant, is his trunk. So he's called hati, hasti. So he grabbed Krishna like that, and Krishna just slapped him with his left hand. And he dropped him. And then Krishna immediately went between the legs of the elephant behind him. Now, the elephant isn't strong of eyesight. His strong sense is his sense of smell. So he put his trunk behind him, and Krishna kept hiding from one leg to the next. He was like dancing around between the legs of the elephant, and when the elephant would look from here trying to grab him, Krishna would, and everyone was thinking, "This is amazing, look how artfully this boy is dancing around in those colorful clothes and dancing around and avoiding the elephant in this way." And the elephant, the Jiva Goswami said, the elephant started thinking, "Who is this boy? He moves like a dancer, but strikes like a lion." Very intelligent elephant also. Because everything that Krishna does, it's with such grace. He moves like a dancer, but strikes like a lion. So, then Krishna ran out, or he allowed the elephant. Krishna ran out and stood before the elephant. The elephant caught him again. And Krishna next pulled him from behind by his tail. Now, if you have a big, fat elephant body, just imagine someone pulling you by your little small tail. Now, that's, no, I won't use common vernacular slang, but that is going to cause you a lot of pain. So Krishna would pull him one way, but the way he would pull him is the elephant would try to go to the right, and Krishna would pull him in the exact opposite direction. So the elephant would try to go one way, and Krishna would pull him in the exact opposite way. And he did, whatever way the elephant would go, Krishna would pull him in the exact opposite way. And he pulled him in this way for 25 bow lengths, which you now know is how many feet? 125, yes. He pulled the elephant by his tail 125 feet. And the elephant was in so much pain. And he was in so much angry, but he was in so much pain, he couldn't run away even. And then Krishna slapped the elephant. And then Krishna began to run. And then he tripped. He made believe he tripped. And the elephant was running after him. And then he saw, this is my opportunity. So he took his tusk and tried to drive it into the Krishna. And Krishna rolled out of the way. And then the elephant got up. And Krishna kept defeating him and bewildering him. And then Krishna finally, I don't know if you've ever seen how a fight between a lion and an elephant. It's actually lions very rarely attack elephants. Did you know that? Because elephants are very, very dangerous. But if they're really, really hungry, they'll do it. It's also interesting that at least that the African lions, they won't attack, but they send their wives to do it. So the pack of the ladies, they go out and attack, but it's so heavy. Because we say like a lion attacking an elephant, I found a YouTube video. I watched it one time and practically I wish I didn't. It was so heavy. The lions, with their claws, they go around them and they have to be very careful because one step and they're finished. And the lion, they have to climb up on the back of the elephant. And then the elephant, this is his weak point, right here. Because his trunk can't get there and certainly his legs can't get there, etc. So he's caught, and then the lion. So Krishna, like a lion attacking an elephant, he slapped the elephant, knocked him to the ground, and he climbed up on the elephant's back. And then he pulled out his tusk, huge tusk. And then... And then he pulled out the other tusk and handed it to Balaram. And all the cowherd boys, they used to do this every day in the forest, things like this. They were just so happy. They loved Krishna. What a hero. Their dearest friend was Krishna. They loved him so much. They didn't think he was God or Narayan or this or that. They just loved him. We have the greatest friend. Look what Krishna did. So then Krishna dressed as he was, Balaram dressed as he was, they each took a tusk on their shoulder. And while the drums are going on, etc., in the wrestling arena, they walked covered with the blood of the elephant. They walked into the wrestling with effulgence, beautifully dressed and all attractive. they walked into the wrestling arena. There's like thousands and thousands of people. And Krishna Balaram walked in there. And everyone goes, wow, so beautiful, so effulgent. Everyone's attention is on Krishna. And Kamsa, no one would tell Kamsa that the elephant had been killed or anything. Kamsa says to one of his assistants, who are those two? The assistant says, those are the two. What is it that they're carrying and why are they painted? They're painted with the blood of the elephant and those are the elephant's tusks. Kamsa, blood pressure rose. But he was so demonic, so fixed in his demonic nature. He just got angrier and angrier. And Krishna and Balaram just walked around the arena. They walked in front of the dais, the big dais where Kamsa was sitting with all his advisors. They turned their back on Kamsa. And everyone started talking about Krishna. We'll talk about what they said. But everyone started just talking about Krishna. Oh, here is Krishna. He's the one who killed Bakasura. Here's Dhanukasura. He's the one who killed Putana. He lifted Govardhana Hill for 7 days. How wonderful is Krishna. Look how beautiful he is. They started saying, oh, how fortunate are the residents of Vrindavan. We are just seeing him for the first time, but every day they would see him, especially the Braja Gopis, they would see him every day. What pious activities must they have done to seek beautiful Krishna every day? Everyone started talking like this. And Kamsa, hearing that, he said, why are these boys aren't worthy of any words at all? Why are these people speaking like that? And Krishna, with his back turned to them, he started saying, or as Jiva Goswami says, with his effulgence, he answered Kamsa. He's saying, who is this Kamsa anyway? If he's so strong, why did he have to put the elephant outside the gate? Why didn't he put his own body out there? If he likes these tusks, why doesn't he just come and take them from us? And then the wrestlers approached Krishna. Chanura started saying, we know you boys are here. We are all here to please the king. The king wants us to wrestle. We've heard you are expert wrestlers and you wrestle with the boys in the forest all the time. Now it is time for you to test your skills against us. We must do this for the king's pleasure, because if the king is pleased, then all the demigods are pleased. So Krishna said, yes, we are forest boys and we certainly want to please the king. But we are just tender young boys. And you are great wrestlers, powerful men. We're used to fighting amongst our friends only. How could we fight with you? It is not suitable that we fight with you. And Chanura said, we know that you are not ordinary young boys. You have killed that powerful elephant, Kuvalar Pita, with your own hands, and he was more powerful than 10,000 elephants. You are not meant to fight with boys. You're meant to fight with us. Let us test your skills. And Krishna said, all right. And then he and Balaram stood up. They still had their tusks over here on their shoulders. They turned around and faced the dais where Kamsa was, walked over there, and drove the tusks into the ground right in front of Kamsa and walked out. Kamsa felt that his heart was being pierced. So there was great wrestling. Being exhibited, and Krishna was enjoying the wrestling, and they were using all the techniques of wrestling. Wrestling is quite the art, and first the wrestlers were thinking, why did Kamsa match us with these little boys? They're not even strong. But then Krishna started pushing them around, and then they started thinking, well, why did Kamsa match us with these boys? They may be strong, but they don't know how to wrestle. And then Krishna started using the most expert wrestling techniques. And then they started saying, why did Kamsa match us against these boys? They're so strong and they're so expert at wrestling. He's just so afraid. So at every step they were criticizing Kamsa. So they were wrestling and pushing each other. They were picking each other up and throwing each other down and doing this and all the different arts and twisting and throwing. And Krishna was perspiring. And the people, especially the ladies in the wrestling arena, they were saying, oh, this is not fair. This is not appropriate. How could we... This is so irreligious. How can we tolerate seeing this? Young boys who are tender fighting these mountain-like men. And the king is watching it. And everyone is watching it. And if we don't say something about it, we're participating in irreligion. Like Bhishma, who was in the world, he would not say anything. And this was sinful when it happened with Draupadi. And Vidura, who was detached, he spoke up, and this was proper. We must speak up. And they were speaking like this. This is not proper. And then Vasudeva and Devaki were listening to this, and they were in so much anxiety. And when Krishna heard these words, he knew that Vasudeva and Devaki were in anxiety, so he decided to kill Janura. So he struck him, I think, with his palm one time. Janura became furious, even though he felt it like being hit with a lightning bolt, and he put his two hands like this, and he hit Krishna as hard as he could in the chest, and Krishna felt like an elephant had been hit with a flower garment. And Krishna grabbed him by his arms and swung him around and around. He had done this with Vatsasura too. I also noticed when I read this, he didn't grab him by his legs. I mean, because after all, he was a demon. He didn't. He grabbed him by his arms and swung him around and threw him to the ground and killed him. Like that. And Balaram, at that time, the people were complaining also because Krishna, they said, he appeared tired in the wrestling. And look at the perspiration on his face. It's like the dew on a lotus flower. But look at Balaram. He's angry because Mastika is hitting him, and he's reciprocating with that in the same mood by getting angry. And his eyes, look, they are reddish like copper. So when Krishna killed Chanura, Balaram immediately killed Mastika. And then Sala, Tosala, and Kuta attacked. And Balaram killed one of them. And Krishna, with his left foot, he kicked the other two and ripped them in half. And then immediately everyone started cheering because they were there for the wrestling cup, and everyone started cheering. There was clearly winners. The boys, they were all in favor of Krishna Balaram anyway. And the And the band started playing, and for 30 minutes, and the coward boys all rushed down into the wrestling arena and they were dancing to the music, Krishna and Balaram and all the coward boys, and then the Krishna and Balaram started wrestling with the coward boys, and sometimes Krishna would throw the coward boys down, and sometimes the coward boys would throw Krishna down, and sometimes the coward boys would defeat Krishna and Balaram, and they would just be playing and dancing. And Kamsa was furious. And after 30 minutes, he said, "Stop that music! Stop it!" He made believe he wanted to make an announcement, and his announcement couldn't be heard over the music. But actually, he could not tolerate it because the music signified the victory of Krishna. And then he said, "Stop this." And when the music stopped, there was silence. And he began to scream and rage. "Kill that Vasudev. He is a liar. He is a cheater. And I never do anything wrong at all." You know, he cheated. He brought Krishna to Mathura, to Gokula, and exchanged them because Narada had told him that. "He is a liar, he's a cheater, kill that Vasudev, immediately kill my father Ugrasena, who has always sided with my enemies, take that Nanda Maharaj and all the coward men and take away all their wealth," because he equated wealth with power. Jiva Goswami says this. "So take away all their wealth, take away all their power. Drive them away, drive these two sons of Vasudev out of the city, drive them away." And he was raging and raging like that. "Kill Vasudev." And Krishna became angry and decided, he didn't have to decide, but he became angry. And without anyone even noticing it, he immediately jumped on the dais. And Kamsa immediately began defending with sword and shield. And like a hawk, he moved this way and that way. But Krishna just grabbed him first by the hair, knocking off his crown. And by that grabbing him by the hair, half of his life air was taken away. And then the way that the different acharyas and Srila Prabhupada describe it in different ways, but I'll just describe it the way that Srila Jiva Goswami or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it. That he took Kamsa and grabbed him by the hair and threw him off the dais to the ground. And then Krishna assumed the weight of the entire universe. And because Krishna did not want to injure his tender body by landing on the ground, he landed on Kamsa and killed her. And Kamsa, with his eyes wide open, was like that. Dead. And no one in the wrestling arena, no one said anything. Kamsa didn't move, but no one said anything. Because Kamsa had stopped blinking long ago out of fear. So they weren't sure he was dead. And then Krishna grabbed him like a lion grabs a dead elephant and dragged him around the arena. And then everyone knew that he was dead. And everyone then could cheer and say, "Giant, how are you?" So we shouldn't be like Kamsa. Even though, because he was always thinking of Krishna, he came to a wonderful end. Because he exchanged Sarupya, she was always thinking of Krishna liberation. But still, we should not be like Kamsa. Thank you so much. We're actually more or less on time for prasadam. So
now, on a prasadam.
And please just take a few minutes before we break, maybe 5 minutes or so, and just offer some prayers. See, think deeply of what you would like to take with you from here. And then pray for some mercy to take that with you. Take shelter and pray to your Guru Maharaj, to the Vaishnavas, to the Prabhupada, to Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Adwaita Gadara, Sri Sri Gauravinda, to Sri Sri Ralabalava, Sri Sri Gornitai, and Sri Jagannath Baladeva, Sri Bhadra Devi. Please be as deep as you can, which I didn't need to say. But, and then, as you feel inclined, stay as long as you like, and then as you feel inclined, go take prasadam.